the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello, this is your host, Athena Melville. In this August 19th podcast of Education Now, we welcome the return of Jacqueline Reeves Pepin, MBA, the Associate Executive Director of the National Association of Biology Teachers. Our focus is science, women in science, and science education today. We will discuss the importance of engaging students in the sciences, especially biology, improving lab skills, teaching evolution, and the need to focus on the STEM disciplines, i.e. science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Jacqueline got both her Bachelor of Arts and Master's of Basic Science degrees in biology, with a minor in anthropology. Her graduate research focused on how naturally occurring compounds affected the cell surface markers of cancer cell lines. By staying on the periphery of classrooms, Jackie has been given rare insight into what actually occurs at all levels of science education. She can see how education policy is created and implemented, and how curriculum is developed and tested. She sees how the latest research is presented to educators for classroom application, and she understands the trials and tribulations teachers encounter every day as they try to motivate their students. And Jackie cares, and she learns, and she works hard to help teachers be the very best they can be. Jackie's work with the National Association of Biology Teachers in McLean, Virginia, includes coordinating with office staff to promote the association by implementing new marketing strategies and acting as the formal liaison between the National Association of Biology Teachers, or the NABT, and major partners and supporters. She is also the official NABT representative during professional development conferences and at regional events, working directly with sponsors and exhibitors. Jackie develops and evaluates projects in which NABT can partner with other organizations, emphasizing themes in biology and/or education. She reports directly to the executive committee, keeping them informed of issues and topics in which NABT should be involved. During the interview, we had problems with the internet connection and kept being interrupted. I apologize for them, but I also love the real feel they bring to my time with Jackie. Please connect with me during or after the podcast on the Education Now Facebook page, or at my personal email at hermes@pacific.net. So without any further ado, we'll get started, and I'll be back at the end of the interview with more information for you. Hello, Jackie Reeves Pepin, and welcome back to Education Now.
Thank you, Athena, for having me.
Oh, it's been so delightful. The last time we talked was in August of 2008. So it's been almost 2 years, right?
It has. I didn't realize it'd been that long.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised myself, and I think that's really exciting to have you back, and you are now the Associate Executive Director of the National Association of
Biology Teachers, right?
Yes, I'm moving up.
You're moving up to the big time.
Exactly.
And I also noticed you told me in an email that you guys had moved your offices from Reston to McLean.
Yes, we went through a major restructure in the last 12 months, and so now we are in a new office complex, and we've hired a new executive director, and we're really starting to come into our own again.
All right. So I told my listeners through promotion that our focus is science, women in science, science education today, and, you know, the importance of engaging students in the sciences, especially biology, improving lab skills, the importance of teaching evolution, and the need to focus on the STEM disciplines in science, especially technology, engineering, and mathematics. So where would you like to start?
Oh, there's so many things. I don't know. I'll let you pick.
You're going to let me pick? You don't
think? I am.
There's not one that's the most important.
Right now, I think probably the most important is getting students involved and interested in the STEM disciplines. And there's major initiatives in this administration to promote science, technology, engineering, and math. And so it's a very exciting time for science education, so we can talk about that.
Okay. So you think it's moving in a positive direction? Are you receiving resistance?
I do think that it's moving in a positive direction. You've had NSF, AAAS, and HHMI, three prominent organizations, formulate a conference on undergraduate biology education that was called the Vision and Change Conference. And what this allowed educators to do was to talk about what skills and topics students needed to be proficient in when they took their undergraduate biology class. And by starting at the undergraduate level, it was much easier to distill what was going to be required at that high school level and even, you know, middle school and elementary school. And so in addition to the Vision and Change, the National Academy of Sciences released a conceptual framework for developing science standards. And there were biology standards and chemistry standards and engineering standards, and the community, the scientific community and the education communities have been reviewing those standards or that framework really with the intent of getting some consensus on what needs to be taught at that K through 12 level. And so it's very exciting because we're now having those conversations. We have a conceptual framework that has galvanized us to move forward and actually make progress, because we can't continue to have reports come out about children and their failing, you know, skills in the sciences, and we don't need any more reports. We need action, and so we're seeing some action. We're seeing some momentum. There's a lot of support for these initiatives with the U.S. Department of Education, and it is a very exciting time to be in the science education world right now.
Yes, yes, I think it is. I think it would be an exciting time, although I feel that teachers and the educational system is not getting the monetary support that it needs to really move ahead with these issues, and also the class size that they need to really make progress with the students. And so I'm hoping that those areas will dovetail into a positive, so that you can really do this. It's so important. There are countries who are ahead of the United States of America in the sciences, and And then they come here to go to graduate school. And so it's urgent. It seems urgent to me.
No, it is urgent. And you do have to have the financial support for getting these initiatives off the ground. And we have to support in-service teachers, the teachers that are already in their classrooms, that are interacting with kids. We cannot leave them behind. We need to reevaluate how teachers are being trained before they even get into the classroom. And we need administrators to understand that they are key stakeholders in this conversation and that they need to champion for their teachers for professional development, for, you know, the ability to go to workshops or take advantage of grants and scholarships to further their own education. And, you know, unfortunately, in this country, we've set up a system where you have to pay to play. And if there's no money, there's no money. And so we really need to reevaluate what our priorities are going to be, because we cannot continue on this path. It's a system that there's a lot of positives, but it is also broken. And, you know, it's going to take administrators. It's going to take teachers, and it's going to take parents understanding what is necessary, and it's going to take school boards and, you know, state boards of education evaluating financing and supporting this, or it's all of this work is going to be for naught.
Right, right. And are you hopeful?
I'm cautiously optimistic. We've seen great strides with the Race for the Top initiative from the Obama administration. You know, nothing gets people motivated better than a couple billion dollars for their state education system. So, but that's a very temporary fix to a long-term problem. And so communities are just going to have to look at their future, which is their students, and decide what sacrifices they can make to help promote and ensure that these students are successful. There's going to be some hard choices.
Yeah, there are hard choices, and I really believe that the money is there, and it's being siphoned off, and it's also being used in things that are not, you know, sustaining, like keeping people in prison. And also, well, this is a whole other topic, but the buildings that most of these classes take place in are in incredible to heat and incredible, you know, to manage. And so they just really need to take a whole different approach all the way around and quit throwing roadblocks. And as you said, we've studied it to death. We need to take action now. And I'm glad that you're hopefully, you know, you're cautiously optimistic. You're cautiously seeing the glasses half full.
Exactly. Is there any other way?
Yeah, I don't think so. Have you seen any progress with the teaching of evolution? Have you seen any progress? Are teachers, you know, that you experience, are they still getting being given a bad time, or has there been some progress?
I think there's been some progress. Last year was the year of science, and for once, we were allowed to celebrate scientific achievement, and instead of reacting to it or trying to justify it. And it was the 200th birthday of Darwin and the 150th anniversary of his publication on the Origin of Species. And when you see everybody being proactive instead of reactive and talking about evolution openly and talking about not just what happened 150 years ago, but the developments that are continuing to happen and the exciting research that's happening in evolutionary biology, it's changed the conversation in a way that people are much more accepting of it. I mean, we still have a long way to go. I would think that 150 years would have been more than enough, but apparently it's not. And in certain states, the teaching of evolution is becoming a state's rights issue and not an education issue, and that's very disappointing.
It is so disappointing to me.
Well, and it should be, and there's been new fossil discoveries, and we've had, you know, lots of research done on ARDI, and there's so many exciting things happening right now, and it's troubling to me that there could be a population of students.
Hello, Jackie. Welcome back, and I'm so sorry we were interrupted.
Absolutely no worries.
Oh, thank you so much. So shall we continue then with discussion on evolution and the teaching of evolution and how things are going? Or do you feel
yes. We
covered that?
Well, I think there's a few more things to be said. One is that the Smithsonian Institution opened up a new exhibit on human origins this year, and I had the opportunity to see that exhibit, and it's phenomenal, obviously. It's at the Smithsonian Natural History Museum, so of course it's outstanding. But I think that the fact that at our national museum that we have this kind of exhibit and we have those kinds of experts walking around, interacting with museum participants, I think that really says something that we are not afraid anymore to discuss evolution openly. It's being recognized as a unifying theme in the biology and life sciences. And so hopefully we won't have to wait another 150 years before it is more widely accepted.
Yes, there was just no question when I was going to school. And so that's why it's just so maddening. Well, thank you for that. Now, how about women in science? Have things gotten better for women in science?
It's hard to tell. And this is obviously a very timely subject because we are looking at a shortage of research, American-born or American-naturalized research scientists, in this country. As you had mentioned earlier, there are lots of individuals who are highly qualified that are coming to our country to do their research. But their ability to get federal funding is limited because they don't qualify as principal investigators from the NIH. So there's definitely...
NIH is an acronym for...
The National Institutes of Health.
National Institutes of Health, okay.
So there's a push to get research scientists, American-born or naturalized citizens, there's a push to get these scientists into research labs as soon as possible because, like I said, we are going to have a shortage of scientists. And so there have been big strides in recruiting women and underrepresented populations, minority students who are from less affluent areas, urban areas, rural areas. So there has been a lot of positive change in that regard. There are still some sciences, I mean, biology, not to brag, we're doing much better than a lot of the other sciences. Biology has not been a male-dominated science for quite some time. We have, especially for biology teachers, there are some estimates that 60% of biology teachers in K-12 are actually women.
Uh-huh.
So we're very excited, but what we don't see is we don't see women scientists becoming principal investigators, getting the funding that some of the their male counterparts do. We don't see the other disciplines making strides. Engineering is specifically very very poorly represented by women still. There has been some positive changes in engineering, but obviously, you know, when you look at fields like biomedical engineering, we want to make sure that there are opportunities for women in those fields and at the traditional engineering schools. So we're doing better. I think we could do even better than we are. And I think that it's really going to take a change in the guard, so to speak. And not that that's, you know, a negative thing. It's just as program officers become younger, they're more diverse, I think what we're going to see a lot of changes in the next, you know, 10 years.
Well, you were saying that there are 60% of teachers in K-12 who teach biology are female. But what about at the university level?
You know, I'm not sure of those numbers. I'm not sure if it's as equitable.
Uh-huh. And that there is a lack, and always has been, of women, female, in engineering. But what about mathematics?
I'm not quite sure about mathematics. I think one of the things that we're seeing, which has actually been very positive, that we see in biology is fields like the medical field, because of some of the recommendations, actually the requirements of the American Medical Association on how long residents can work in a week, and so you don't have these young doctors, you know, pulling 81-hour shifts and things of that nature. You're actually getting, in biology, you're getting a lot of acceptance of half-time, you know, doctors, half-time researchers. There's a lot of gender roles that are being switched, where the women are actually the investigators. They're, you know, if they do have children, sometimes their husbands, you know, are the ones staying home. I mean, we're seeing this across the board in just about every kind of workforce, is that this economy is requiring that we get creative and that we start living in the gray areas, and we stop drawing our lines in the sand of who's doing what and why they're doing it that way. And so I'm hopeful that the other disciplines, engineering, mathematics, they will start seeing those strides that everybody else is seeing, just because it's no longer, you know, it's no longer something they want to do. It's something that they have to do.
Right. And technology, so, too. Technology, too. You know, I wonder if the females are well represented in the technology area. Do you know?
As we look and we see students, you know, some schools are estimating their largest, you know, freshman class this year, because there's not a lot of employment opportunity once you get out of high school. So your options, you know, really are steering more towards college, be it at a four-year school or a community college, and you're just going to, you know, cross your fingers and hope you can figure out how to pay for it. But I think that we'll see a lot more diversity as students are considering college as their only option. And, you know, sometimes hard situations actually have outstanding outcomes, and that's what we're hoping for.
That sounds like a That sounds like a reasonable hope, and I will hope with you. And how about equity in pay? Do you know if the biology teachers, the K through 12, are receiving the same pay that their male counterparts are?
I think in K through 12, they are. Again, I don't have any numbers to back that up. So, you know, if you hear any, you know, comments, let me know. But K through 12, the interesting thing about teaching the public education system right now in this country is there are a lot of school districts that are actually paying for expertise over longevity. And so you can get paid more if you have a master's degree versus just a bachelor's degree. If you have a master's degree in biology or science education. And so what you're finding is that when, you know, love them or hate them, assessments have really gotten administrators to look at the bottom line. And what they're looking at is, how can I get my scores to be higher than the district next to me? You know, how can I justify getting this chunk of state money? And so what they're finding is that they're getting very aggressive about recruiting people that they think are the quote-unquote best teachers. And when you look at graduation classes and you look at, I think that the disparity between what men and women in hiring new teachers is pretty much gone as long as they have the qualifications. What that means for in-service teachers and tenured track teachers remains to be seen in some districts. I mean, one of the issues that we all have to face is we want the very best teachers for our students. What do you do? How do you protect the best teachers? How do you call out some of the, you know, mediocre teachers? But how do you protect the people who are in there, who are doing a good job, and no matter how long they've been at the school district? So, again, a lot of hard decisions are going to be needing to be made, because the old rules of seniority are starting to fall by the wayside, and schools are learning, you know, they're learning very quickly that losing their senior teachers is very bad. You have a high turnover rate with younger, inexperienced teachers. You know, that 3 to 5 years, teachers are in their classroom wondering, and especially if they have a master's degree, do I want to be a teacher my whole life? Do I want to put in the time to make this my career? Or do I want to go back into research? Do I want to go into advocacy? There are so many options available, and, you know, so we hope that people are being prudent about who they're hiring, how they're hiring them, making sure that they have fair pay structures, making sure that there are fair practices for both men and women, to be able to take care of their families and have that work-life balance that we know is so important to alleviating burnout. So, but, you know, every district, every school, every department is different.
Yes. There was a lot of discussion this year about paying teachers who are successful more money. You know, an anti-tenure kind of a philosophy, like if a teacher is very successful in the classroom, well, then let's just pay her more money, and that will be an incentive to just draw the very best teachers. Did you have thoughts on that?
It's hard because we need to define what the best teacher means. And I think in every school system, it's different. And I think that there are a lot of programs like Teach for America that do an excellent job getting inspired, motivated individuals into classrooms and especially high-risk classrooms, that, I mean, it's just phenomenal, the work they do. But what happens, you know, when they've been there for 5 years, are they still a Teach for America teacher, or are they part of that school's administration? Are they part of that school, and what kind of support are they getting? And so it's just... It's impossible to predict.
Right.
It's impossible to tell.
I have a feeling that they're going by the test scores that teacher's class, you know, how well they're performing on the tests. And to me, the tests are just not the way to go.
They aren't, and you have to have a balance, but you can't also have no assessment.
Oh, no, I don't. I'm not saying that. That's for sure. It's a well, welcome back, Jackie. I'm so sorry that we keep having these problems today. But I was so looking forward to this call, and then we have all these interruptions. But let's continue. We were talking about paying teachers who someone determines is a better teacher than other people, more money, and what you thought of that. Did you have anything else you wanted to say on that topic?
No, only that because we have to use assessments, and we recognize that teachers are professionals and that they should be rewarded for the skills that they bring in and the expertise that they share with their students, that it's important that student assessments are not the only criteria for judging if a teacher is successful or not. But that teachers actually have a voice in how they are going to be evaluated. It's very important that they don't get ignored, and that their concerns and their questions are addressed respectfully by administration.
Yes, I so agree with you. And I did have on a gentleman from Race to the Top, who represented the White House, and he was saying that, gee, they found out that if you let the students work on projects and you follow their interest, they end up doing just as well or better on the tests than these kids who have been being spoon-fed the test day after day. And I said, I'm not surprised. And that's what I mean by, so I've pushed record again, Jackie, and it may just go. I'm hoping that it's the time of day, but we will try one more time. Are you there?
I am.
Last time I kept talking because I didn't know you were gone.
Technology, you have to love it.
I guess we do, and we both must be pretty positive. I'm not angry yet.
Oh, it's just, there's no need to get angry this late in the afternoon.
Yes. So what haven't we covered that you feel is really important?
There is one event that I'd like people to know about. It's the USA Science and Engineering Festival, and it's happening in Washington, D.C. in October. But there are satellite events all over the country, and it's the whole point is to get kids interested in science, technology, engineering, mathematics. There's all sorts of exciting things, like having lunch with the Nobel laureate and contests for students that they can do Rubik's Cubes, and they can make their own films, and they can do there's all sorts of things going on. And we haven't had a chance to really have fun with science in so long, and we're all scientists because we like fun, and we
yes.
like to get our hands dirty. And so, you know, I'd like to tell your listeners, check out the website. It's the USA Science and Engineering Festival. It's at usasef.org. Find out what's going on in your area. Take your kids. Take yourself. It's time to celebrate science.
Yes. Now, tell us again. Now, U.S. What did you say the letters were? What does it stand for? How do they get involved?
It's the USA Science and Engineering Festival, And let me just confirm the link, because now, of course, with all of our bad luck today, I would hate to give people the wrong link. That would just not work out.
Yes.
So hold on one second. You'd think I'd have it memorized. And the festival itself, the main festival, is on the Mall in Washington, D.C. in October. It is October 23rd and 24th, but the festival runs all through the fall. There's
This is Jackie, right?
Yes. Well, nobody else answered.
Well, that time, I'm almost sure it wasn't me. Because my DSL didn't go down. So whatever's happening, there's some kind of glitch. I don't want it to spoil things. But so you were telling us about this incredible festival in October in Washington, D.C., where students can go, and it's all focused on science. Do you want to continue about that?
Yeah, it's completely open to the public. It's free. It's on the Mall. There are over 400 organizations that have signed up and will, you know, not be showing our wares, but we'll be doing mini experiments. There will be an evolution trail, so participants can go and take little quizzes and win prizes, and it's going to be fun. And so I definitely recommend that, even if you can't get to Washington, D.C. in October, there are satellite events all over the nation. Take advantage of this great opportunity to discover science or to rediscover science.
To discover science or rediscover science. And you can, if you can't go to Washington, D.C. in October, you can do it by satellite. And do you have dates?
The event itself, the festival on the Mall, starts October 23rd and 24th. But the inaugural event is actually in Maryland, I think, and that is on October 10th.
Okay, so that just sounds – give me the dates again.
The festival dates are from October 10th to October 24th.
October 10th to October 24th. And can people go onto the web and find out information about this?
Yes, they can. The website is www.usascienceFestival.com.
It's not on this side somehow, or whatever it is. It's very bizarre because DSL is still up. But let's... You got the website out, which is great, and welcome back, Jackie. And I love you so much for being so patient with me. And I just want to be able to say thank you so much for joining me today after a long day. I know you've been working all day. And for taking this time with all of the varied interruptions to be with me. And I hope that we can do it again and that we won't have all of these interruptions.
I'm up for talking to you anytime that you'd like, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you for being on Education Now, Jackie. It was my total pleasure. And talk to you soon.
Yes, you take care, Athena.
I love you.
Love you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Well, thank you all for listening. The web address for the USA Science and Engineering Festival, happening October 10th through October 24th this fall, is the, you know, three W's, USA Science Festival, all one word, usascienceFestival.org, that Jackie was talking about there at the end, and I wanted to be sure you heard that whole address. I hope you all get a chance to participate in this event. I thank Jackie for her time, and I thank her family for sharing her with us. Contact information for Jacqueline Reeves Pepin is J. Reeves Pepin, all one word, J. Reeves Pepin, at nabt.org. And their web address is www.nabt.org. Well, our next podcast is September 2nd, 2010, when we feature an interview with Joanne Deek, author of Girls Will Be Girls and How Girls Thrive. Joanne Deek will be one of the keynote speakers at the Fall Regional American Montessori Society Conference, to be held in San Diego, October 22nd through the 24th. We hope that you'll enjoy this interview with Joanne. We spoke with her in September of 2009 before the American Montessori Fall Regional Conference held in Irvine, California in October of that year. She feels that there are definitely distinctions between the male and the female brain, so you'll want to listen to that interview. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. All broadcasts can be listened to with free download at our website. Education Now podcasts are listed on the American Montessori website at amshq.org in the regional group events pages. I'm sending best wishes to all of you, and thank you so much for listening. Good night now.
Are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.